Welcome to another episode of Always Bev, The Ripple Effect. I am your host, Barb Jordan.
That's where it happened. I met this beautiful lady. She looked like a celebrity. She was so kind to me, nice to me.
Today's episode is about sex trafficking and the warning signs, and about a victim who tells her tale of how quickly she fell into it. But before I get into that, I want to talk about our last episode was on active shooting. And yesterday in New York, there was an active shooter in a New York subway. And they interviewed an individual, a young man who was on the subway at that time. And afterwards, he said, "I was so scared. I didn't know what to do." And I think that's one of the things that Always Bev is all about. It's about providing people with tools on how to stay safe. I mean, there is everybody. The guy who did it, of course, just like looked like a normal looking guy, yet he's riding the subway and all of a sudden he pulls out a gas mask and he puts it on. That's the moment. That's the warning sign. If you're ever in danger, if you ever have a split second where you say something's not right, that's weird, that's strange, that's your moment to make a move. Now, I don't know what you could do on a jammed subway. Maybe at that point it's actually to attack the shooter when he actually whips out the gun instead of run and hide, because there's not many places to run and hide. But I want to remind everybody, in today's world especially, be aware of your surroundings. Watch for the warning signs, and when you see them, know that you have seconds to act to save your life. Receiving nice gifts, a life promised better than the one they're currently living in. That's how easy it is for somebody to fall victim to sex trafficking. Somebody who's left unsupervised, somebody who receives lavish gifts, promises for a wonderful life. All the while, bad intentions are waiting for them.
If the evil man would look like a devil from the movie, you know, with the horns red, with the pitchfork, we would know that it's evil. We would stay clear. We would understand that this is danger. But it's everything so camouflaged.
My guest today is Lena Sabula. First of all, Lena, I want to thank you for taking the time to share your experience about being a victim of sex trafficking. And also in the same breath, I want to say I'm sorry that this was part of your life. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of things after sex trafficking, but I want to talk about and take you back to a very difficult time, to when you became a victim of sex trafficking. How old were you?
Well, I was around 18 years old, but it didn't start there. It's actually start earlier than that, probably around when I was 13. My parents became an alcoholics because they were struggling their marriage and they lost their well-paying jobs. So government turned off electricity and hot water for outstanding bills, and we struggle in poverty trying to survive. So I was hungry all the time, and I was literally starving, and I was raped numerous times. That's how it all started with me. But it's not always vulnerable people like get into human trafficking afterwards, but that's where my story begins.
All right. So you went through some difficult time with your family and your parents back when you were 13 years old and they lost their jobs. And how would you say the supervision of you was during that time when they were going through this difficult time?
Well, now I'm calling it, I was an orphan with the life parents because there was no discipline, there was no care, there was no supervision.
What happened when your parents lost their job? Obviously, that must have been difficult, but how did your life change as far as the supervision? Did you have supervision prior to that?
Yeah, absolutely. They actually did a very good job to conceal everything from us for a very long time. So now when I'm on another side, when I'm mom and wife as well, I understand how difficult it must have been. but they actually divorced when I was 2 years old and then got back together. So I do believe they have hardcore over a decade of suffering beneath that pretends that everything is okay. And I bet they tried for kids. I bet they tried for society because divorce that time wasn't common as right now, added to the negative experience that they were going through. And literally for me, it was everything fall apart so fast that I couldn't keep up. I was so lost. I was just becoming a teenager, and it was horrifying to see that everything was, the facade was crumble, and beneath that it was rotten. Everything was, their relationship was bad.
Okay. So all around you, the world, their world and your world started crumbling, and it was happening before your eyes. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. When you were growing up, you said your parents, before this happened, your parents did a great job of supervising you. And I realized you were only 13 years old. At the age of 13, did you have any idea what sex trafficking was?
No.
At the age of 13, did you know what sexual assault was?
Nope.
Okay. Well, let's start, because it seems from what you're saying that sexual assault happened first. How old were you when you were first raped?
I probably was close to 14 years old.
And was it done by somebody that you know?
No, absolutely. Because we have lots of strangers that time coming to our house. You know, they brought booze and drugs, and my parents did nothing to protect me. So I actually become an easy target for those guys. I was drugged and raped in my basement numerous times.
God, I'm so sorry about that. And then how did the sex trafficking happen? How many years passed from that experience? That sounds like it was continuous. How many years passed before you entered into sex trafficking?
Well, it was around 3 years, but it got from bad to worse, because when I thought things couldn't get any worse, 1 month before my 15th birthday, so I was 14 years old, I woke up with the severe abdominal pain. And scared and confused, only to realize that I was in labor. I actually delivered the baby girl, and I didn't know I was pregnant, and I didn't know who her father was.
And was this done in the basement of your house?
Well, I give birth in the hospital.
Okay, so you made it to the hospital.
Yes, and very interesting, because I was very skinny. I was that time smoking and drinking, so I didn't even expect that this is going to be happening. But I knew that she's going to have health complications because I didn't take care of myself. I didn't even know she was there. And she died 3 months later from health complications. And I buried her when I was 15 years old.
I'm sorry.
I suffered with depression and panic attacks, so much anxiety, because it's not like I submit to whatever was going on with me, but I felt so broken and worthless and hopeless to actually bring the life into this world without knowing, and she lost her life. So it was my sin that I carry. And I started using heroin because it wasn't enough just drinking to camouflage that pain, to numb that, to medicate myself to the point that I wouldn't exist. So I was right there walking that path.
It's so much to take on, especially at a young age like that. In your home, did you have other siblings, other people close to you that you could at least talk to about what was going on, or did they know what was happening to you and nobody said anything?
Well, I have a sister who is almost like 2 years younger than me. She was kind of protected too, because some family took her in, and I had a brother, but he was so young, he wasn't understand anything. Later on, actually, the government will take him away into orphanage. And that's what I was so blown away, that the parents still alive and they lost the custody of their son.
Mm. when you started using heroin, did that bring you around a different crowd? Did your lifestyle change a little bit once you started using heroin?
Well, absolutely. I just became a street junkie, you know, and it was very interesting because I pretty much don't recall anything for the next 3 years. I have no memories, no recollection much, except that I just need to be high, where to get money and how to get by. But one day I literally have this awakening because people were dying around me. Some went to jail and I was so tired. I was really tired of this lifestyle. So desperate and in despair, I needed change. And that's where it happened. I met this beautiful lady. She looked like a celebrity. She was so kind to me and nice to me. She brought me to her house and offered me fancy coffee and sweets. I was so impressed because honestly, it felt wonderful and safe. And nobody cared for me this way for a very long time. So she said that she would be able to find me a job, not specific, but just a job. But honestly, I agree without much thought because I just was eager to escape because I thought it was an opportunity.
So you're on the street, you're using drugs, you're broken, you're exhausted, and this wonderful lady appears out of nowhere. Is that how it happened?
Not that in and nowhere, because like one guy introduced me to her, you know, so like it was like they found me. That's kind of like that happened.
Okay. And she took you to her house. How far away was her house? Was it in that neighborhood?
The same city. Yeah, it was the same city.
Okay. So really right where you were at, she made you all these promises. Everything seemed so too good to be true. And she said she could get you a job. So what was your first experience when she said, I've got you a job. Today's your first day of work.
Oh, that's got even like worse than that. So it didn't happen this way. Although her team went to work and they dressed me, they cleaned me, they washed me. And I was kind of thinking what kind of job I'm going to be doing that I have to look so nice. But I still was like so out of it because I still on drugs. And then I don't really recall the airport. I don't know how I went through customs. I never know. Just one day I woke up hearing Muslim call to prayer, Allahu Akbar, ran out. So I was confused and terrified because I was in a foreign country.
Wait, let me interrupt you right there. Yeah. What country did you grow up in?
Ukraine. I'm from Ukraine.
And so they took you, this wonderful lady who promised you a new job, who cleaned you up, who dressed you in wonderful clothes. Was she still providing you drugs?
No, I was by myself on drugs.
Okay, so off to the side.
It was very fast. It wasn't like very long period of time. It was in days or weeks. Like it wasn't very long. She didn't care for me that long. But it was like super fast. And one day I woke up and I'm in a foreign country.
And what country was that?
It was Egypt. I was in Egypt.
Knowing nobody.
Yeah, no language, no knowing nobody. And now like I have withdrawals from heroin. So I thought I'm going to die. And it was really bad for a week probably. And that's why people don't quit drugs, because usually your organs shut down and you died. So I actually recover. And I think because my brain was so fascinated by this new sound, new scent, new everything like so different. I think it's kind of like make my body recover. So, but one thing that I want to tell you while we're talking about this, because sometimes we think about human trafficking, it have to be force or it have to be violence, but you have to look for those signs as well. I didn't have my passport. You know, somebody else got me through the customs. So you have to like look for those signs, submissive or anxious or paranoid, or somebody does this willingly. You have to think why this already growing up girl actually cannot speak for herself. Stuff like that, because it's very camouflage. If we would see force and violence, we would right away have a light bulb, oh, something wrong, and we would ask questions. But this happened to me. Nobody even knew that they literally took me from one country to another without really me understanding or any permission. And it went seamlessly fine. Nobody asked the question. Nobody stopped me.
Because they didn't force you. They weren't being physical with you. They weren't threatening you or manipulating you. And so, and if they did, when you went through customs, you could have screamed for help. You could have drawn attention. But because they were just so quiet about everything, you were just submissive, and it was an easy transition.
Exactly.
Mm. How many years were you sex trafficked?
Well, actually, I was like in a brothel. They sold me into the brothel, and I was there almost 2 years.
Mm. Okay. How many other, was it females and males, or was it all women?
Well, there was all women, but the women who actually came with me, and that's what I realized, there was so many people died around me that I am so grateful to be here and sharing my story, because the girls who came with me, they all gone missing and never come back home. Some just probably got murdered. And yeah, so honestly, nobody looked for me for 3 months. I left my city, my country, no my parents, no my grandparents, like nobody like even knew that I'm actually not in the country. So if I would be disappear, nobody would care.
So you're in Egypt, you're in a brothel. And how many other people were with you approximately?
I actually kind of skip part of the story. They force us under the barbed wire into Israel. So I actually was in Israel in the brothel for almost 2 years.
So you went from Egypt to Israel?
Correct.
Okay. And then from there, they put you into a brothel. How many people were in the brothel with you?
I don't recall exactly, but probably 20 girls easier.
Wow. What would you say their ages were?
I probably was the youngest one. So I was 18 and up to 40.
Yeah. Now, here's a very ignorant question, and I'm going to ask it because so many people ask this question. Why didn't you just leave?
That's not ignorant. That would be probably like in everybody's mind. But first of all, I have a bodyguard, you know, so I was a prisoner, number one. The second, well, even if I wanted to, I don't want to leave, because honestly, my life back home, being on the street, right, beaten to death, compared to this one, at least like I was protected and I was fed, you know, all the basic needs were met. That was how crazy it is. Like some people think human trafficking, you have to be in a dark room and like beating but with violence, you know, but most of the time trafficking prey on psychological needs, you know, need to be humanly just like, oh, psychological and physical, need to be fed, need to be clean, need to be cared for and secure and safe. And another one, need to be loved, need to be protected, and need to be, I don't know, belong, you know, it's like all this stuff that I didn't have. For a normal people who is growing up in a normal family, for them, probably it's bizarre. But fact is, like in another country, you don't know what to do. And honestly, the fear, like in other part as well, too, where you go, what you're going to do, who needs you? There's nothing more than that. Well, at least wasn't for me.
So they gave you shelter. They gave you clothes. They kept you safe. You were around other people that didn't hurt you. So in a lot of ways, you're saying it was better than being on the street.
Correct. That was a great for me. I know it's crazy sound, but it's literally, it's not a usual situation, because honestly, it's very dangerous. I just got lucky, I'm doing quotation marks, because that was one in a million place like that. So I don't know. I was protected.
You were in there 2 years. Is that about right?
Yes.
And so after being in there 2 years, were you ever thinking to yourself, I have to get out. There's more to life than this. How did you get out?
Well, actually, there was a very interesting situation because one of my bodyguards actually shared the good news of God's love with me. And when my grandfather had a heart attack, he took me to Jerusalem to pray. And when I came to this veiling wall where it's a holy ground and you can ask God for a favor, and I was overcame by the amount of shame that I felt, like who I am and who I am to ask him this favor. But God heard my prayer, honestly, and desire of my heart. And that's actually what triggered me, that what I'm doing not okay and I want to seek way out. But you actually never leave this kind of situation alive unless you have been rescued. But I don't know any other explanation that by the grace of God, they actually set me free. And I was allowed to go home after 2 years.
So one day they walked in or wherever you were and they said, Lena, you can go.
Not really. It wasn't that easy.
That's too easy. Yeah, okay. That was too glamorous.
They would never let me go, but it was a long time and long conversation, and it was many conversations. And in the end, they actually allowed me to go.
And how did you get out of the country?
Oh, I flew back. That's what another crazy part. Nobody even asked me. I had like no documents, nothing. The police didn't. They just put me on the plane and they're like, okay, go. And that's what like so ridiculous, how crazy oil, like well-oiled machine is this, that they didn't even question me. They went through all my stuff, you know, and they didn't really interrogate me. They ask like usual custom stuff that like I went on vacation and I went through and I came home.
And you went back to Ukraine.
Yes.
And how was that experience seeing your family again, knowing what you had been through and they had no idea?
They really didn't care. They were really excited to see that I'm alive, probably like a couple days, and then it was back to normal. It was crazy. Yeah.
All right. Well, you have done a lot to recover, and you are a survivor, and you have actually written an autobiography called Miraculous. How long did it take you to write that book?
I actually wrote that book for 3 years. Yeah, 3 years. And I call it, it's my therapy with God, because honestly, without that book, I wouldn't be looking at my past and dealing with my past, but it was necessary because I reconciled with myself, because now I'm looking back through like with new perspective, you know, through the eyes of being loved and healed and forgiven. So I reconciled with my family, and it was very interesting experience. And I have so much gratitude about the past. And yeah, it was amazing.
You've partnered with Fights for Freedom, which is anti-sex trafficking. Let me ask you this. What do you know now that you wished you knew then?
I guess the fact that it's still, the human trafficking is not okay, you know, and that's why I advocate and I stay and I fight against those who actually been kidnapped and raped and physically or emotionally entrapped, you know. Although I do believe I didn't have a choice and that's how it's supposed to be and it giving mission, but I do understand and I saw so much of it, how it could be end up. I could be dead million time over. So I'm speaking for those people who are in that situation and they don't have a choice.
Yes, so yes.
That's what I've learned.
Well, I know that you are a big advocate, and I've talked to you a little bit about, we've had some advocates on this podcast that I'm going to put you in contact with. And I want to thank you for everything that you do to try to prevent this from happening to others. if you could identify, and I know you did a little bit earlier, what do you think the red flag warnings are to people out there that might be being pursued or being contacted for sex trafficking?
Absolutely. So red flags for people who are being groomed for sex trafficking are being secretive about their activities, or having new clothing or jewelry that they cannot afford to buy, or suddenly have a new or second cell phone with a secret number. So if you see those, you just ask questions. And victims of human trafficking, like I said, fearful and anxious and depressed, submissive, tense, nervous, or paranoid, they are showing signs of abuse, such as bruising, fractures, or tattoo of branding symbols, especially name. And you know that it's obviously sometimes might be not a sign of human trafficking, but it could be. So you don't dismiss anything, you know, you don't have to be like scared and paranoid, but you can sense something and thinking like, where did she get that stuff? You know, I know she has no money, and just ask those questions, you know, so you might save someone's life. And if there is immediate danger, you have to call 911 or local police. Like if you suspect someone being trafficked and you see it and you understand it, call hotlines, call 911 police service. And definitely there's so much you can do. Although like sometimes we think it's overwhelming too, because we want to change the world. But my friend says everybody can help somebody. So I do believe if you see the red flag, just learn, ask the question. If you see somebody's behavior change and they becoming the anxious and paranoid around you, you know those people, you know, ask question. Why do you feel like that? What's going on? And you might find out something more that is disturbing. Or it might be just, you know, online learning and it's stressful, something like that. But just don't dismiss like it is, should be normal. You know, just ask question.
Yeah. And I think asking questions sometimes is hard for parents, you know, because it is awkward. It is a topic that people are not educated on. But I do think that is great advice. What about brothels? What are warning signs or just entities that are where these women are being sex trafficked? What are warning signs if somebody is around an area like that? What would be the warning signs from the outside looking in?
Well, honestly, it's very hard to spot. Mm. Sometimes we walk in through the places without even thinking that that's hot spot areas. But honestly, guys, you're going to be blown away. Schools are number one. Schools, or the areas that where the maybe immigrants or low income families as well, because that's what they're preying on, being vulnerable physically or emotionally. Or it would be some, I don't know, the hotels, it's seriously like the massage, even those massage places, they're so camouflaged. So you have to know that there's there to see it, because they don't advertise it. I always say, you know what? If the evil man would look like a devil from the movie, you know, with the horns red, with the pitchfork, we would know that it's evil. We would stay clear. We would understand that this is danger. But it's everything so camouflaged. And people like, it happened to me too. I've been trafficking through the friend who introduced me to that lady. Most of the people who've been trafficked are by the family, by friends, by the loved ones, or by having a boyfriend or girlfriend who actually grooming them for sex trafficking. That's how scary it is, that before you understand that you're already in this trap, you're already so far into it. And that's the scariest part. That's why I really love they fight for freedom, because they go into the schools and they educate their new generation. They're very big on educating community, because if you see and know and understand those things, you can ask those questions. If your daughter dating the boyfriend who lavish her with this stuff, you know, like excessively, and then she starts pulling away, you know, it's nothing wrong if somebody fall in love with your daughter, but you as an adult, you know what it means, you know, like it's sweet, it's dates and stuff. If somebody over excessively getting like expensive present and luring them, like you would feel something wrong, you know? So don't dismiss those feelings and just follow up on this stuff, you know, be involved in your children's lives, because that's what, like you said, it's hard to talk about those things, you know, but if you don't ask about different things, you know, it would be hard to talk about this one. But if from beginning you be involved in those relationships, you would know. And honestly, for all of those who are struggling with this right now and who kids got astray, and I know this amazing people who strive to do the best of the best, nobody protected from it, so it's not your fault. Don't feel bad or guilty that something happened, it's something you missed. Just take those steps that you can do now. Love on those children, take care of your families, and see the red flags, and although it's uncomfortable, go there, ask the question, dig deep, you know, because those relationships are important, and maybe you're gonna get there just in the right time.
Yeah, for sure. This is excellent insight and information to help others. And I want to thank you so much for sharing your experience and for educating others and for all you're doing with Fights for Freedom. And of course, your autobiography, Miraculous, in letting people know, you know, what has happened and what you've been through, which I can't even imagine. But I think one of the most beautiful things about you, Lena, is that you have ended up on the other side and you live a beautiful life now. And I applaud you for that. And that is very, very inspiring.
Yeah, it took me a while. And that's what I want to tell people who come out from any trauma. I'm just general talking about overcoming adversity. It takes time, almost like close to 20 years. And now I finally feel well. So you know what, whatever, like, your time takes to healing, don't apologize. It takes time, takes those steps. You know, I went through lots of therapy, counseling. I have army who's supporting me, because I always say it takes only one person to get out, and it take like whole army of people to support you through it. But the fact is, like, you're never alone. There's people who will help you if you want to get out, or you just come out and you don't know what to do. Reach out to organizations like Fight for Freedom. They have counseling and they have support, you know, they have housing. They will help you with whatever you need help. So don't feel that you cannot leave because you're alone. I think this is another thing that I didn't know, and I didn't have those and opportunities and the knowledge, but like about organizations like that, because if I would, like, I probably would leave from it like so much sooner.
Lena, I want to thank you for joining me today and sharing your story so others can learn.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you have concerns about human trafficking, please call 888-373-7888 or text 233-733. That's 233-733. All tips, all information can help save lives. In my next episode, I interview Kirsi Helliwell, who was the best friend of Susan Powell. Susan Powell's body has never been found. And the night she went missing, Susan Powell's husband took her two young sons on a camping trip in the middle of a blizzard. I'm your host, Barb Jordan. Thanks for joining me on another episode of Always Bev, The Ripple Effect.